championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. Today, we're going to be going over the Big 12 media days that are going on next week in Jerry World, which should be a blast. It's going to be probably better than what happened in Frisco the year before, well, at least a better venue. Talk about who's going, because Texas is bringing a whole host of characters. Talk about the guys on the preseason awards lists. Talk about Texas finishing number 2 in the preseason poll, and tell you whether or not to put any stock in that using historical data from years past. Then also talk about questions that we want to hear Tom Herman answer and think that he actually would. Then get into some recruiting as Texas landed 2 big exclamation marks over the past week, but some question marks also showed up during the week, and we're going to go ahead and talk about those as well. Joe, how have you been? I think I know how you've been because I saw a video of you. What was it on Twitter of you trying to hit the pillow on the post?
Yeah,
with the old baseball throw.
Threw a flat ground and smartly only limited myself to about 12 pitches, or else I would not have been able to brush my teeth this morning. But
I think it was smart that you took the pillow on the post out of view, so it just looked like you threw a nice fastball right at it.
Well, you heard the sound hit chain link only, so it could only go so far. But yeah, I gotta, you know, that was the deadest sports day of the year. I gotta figure out some way to break through the monotony.
There's that, and there's one other day, isn't there?
This one's the worst. It's the SB day, and that's basically not sports, so the day after the Super Bowl is always a little rough because I think it's kind of in between spring training and football. And, you know, you're just in middle of the regular season for basketball and hockey. So not to say that it's dead, but it's not active. But nothing right. Compares to 2 days ago, I guess, on that All-Star game, the back end of the All-Star break for baseball.
But it wasn't devoid of news, especially with NBA free agency going on, which is an entirely other subject that I don't want to get into because we'll get into an hour of talking about that and whether or not, you know, my thoughts on the NBA, which I've shared. But there was also a lot of news coming out about Big 12 Media Days as we have been sending in polls that they've been asking us for, the media, to rank who we think is going to win the Big 12. And then who we think is, at the very end of the year, going to be on that all Big 12 team. Texas fared pretty well in those two. In a year that has a lot of question marks and a lot of positions, including polling position, as Texas, we'll start off here, Texas finished 2nd behind Oklahoma, stopping Oklahoma from getting 69 votes, which I think is a small victory within itself, and ends up 2nd in that poll. With Iowa State coming after them, TCU, Oklahoma State, Baylor, Tech at 7, West Virginia at 8, Kansas State at 9 and 10, and is Kansas. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you can separate these 10 teams into 3 groups, right? There's the potential elite talent guys in Oklahoma, Texas, and even Iowa State. I really do respect what Matt Campbell's doing up there, and I think his defense, which Todd Orlando has taken from, including his offensive guys, even though he's losing Montgomery and Hakeem Butler, it seems like he has been able to, at least at the wide receiver position, reload, and Brock Purdy is legit. So he has a good balance up there. And you got Texas and Oklahoma. The second group is TCU, Oklahoma State, and Baylor, who all have really good coaches. I mean, man, Joe, I heard Rod Babers talking about this on the air earlier 2 days ago, but if you had to choose a coach in the Big 12, you know, who would you choose? Because there are so many good names out there, including TCU's Gary Patterson, Oklahoma State's Mike Gundy, and Baylor's Matt Rhule. All three of those teams could surprise. I mean, honestly, this is like a TCU. This is the year like that usually TCU surprises everybody, where they're supposed to have a terrible year because of the year before, and they've lost everybody, and all of a sudden they just pop out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have the last group of 4, which is Texas Tech, West Virginia, and Kansas State, and Kansas, who all have new coaches. So what do you think about Texas getting number 2 in that spot?
I agree with pretty much everything you just said. I think oftentimes with Texas, they're voted number two or number three, even though they sucked the previous year, were average the previous year. And it's the common trope, like, oh, they're overrated. I don't think they're overrated this time. I think right there at number two is the perfect spot for them. Iowa State, I think, you know, with the way Matt Campbell's built his program, with Brock Purdy, like you mentioned, and with that defense being as strong as it is, with Mike Rose in the middle, they have another linebacker that's really good in the middle there on defense. I think it's going to be tough for teams to win in Ames this year, and Texas plays theirs. TCU, they're going to have a really good defense. I'm fully confident in that, but just that quarterback question is huge for me. I think I've mentioned this before. You either have a grad transfer from Penn or a transfer from Penn, a quarterback with half a foot, a quarterback who's basically a running back, a transfer who you don't know, you know, if he's either going to play this year or how healthy he is, and a true freshman who might be your best, but he's still a true freshman. So there's still a lot of good talent on that TCU offense, but the fact that quarterback is such a huge question, it makes me wonder maybe if you should flip Oklahoma State and TCU, make TCU 5 and Oklahoma State 4. Okie State, I think they're going to be
great. They had the same quarterback question, right? But it's less so.
I think their quarterback question is different because you have either two guys who were able to redshirt all of last year, learn the system behind a backup who, you know, kind of carried the team as it needed to be carried. One is extremely talented in Spencer Sanders, Mr. Texas Football. The other is a veteran. The other is a guy who, like I mentioned, has played college football at the D1 level, redshirted last year. So I don't think – definitely there's still a quarterback question, but I don't think there's as much quarterback uncertainty in Stillwater. And plus you have a new addition to the offensive brain trust up there. Now the thing with Baylor is Charlie Brewer's good. There's some skill talent that's good, but I don't know if anybody on Baylor is great. I don't know if any, you know, right. I don't know if Charlie Brewer in the system that Matt Rule's trying to run will be able to lead them past the elite teams of the conference, because it's going to take him doing that. I think he's a very good quarterback, and, you know, if he were put onto, you know, a top five team somewhere, he would not look super out of place, but a lot's going to fall on his shoulders this year. And, you know, this is going to be one of the biggest years to test if Matt Rule's, you know, recruit a bunch of speed and add football skill later philosophy will work. And then, like you mentioned, the bottom four, the new coaches tier with Texas Tech, West Virginia, Kansas State, and Kansas. Kansas, they're stupid. Not only because they hired Les Kenning to be their offensive coordinator, but, you know, Les Miles could have walked into Arlington, you know, been able to sell his program. Hey, this is the new Kansas. This is my program. Things are going to be different. And then he went ahead and reinstated Puka Williams. And I can guarantee you question one or two is going to be about Puka Williams returning to the team after all the domestic violence and suspension that he put himself through this past spring. Kansas State at 9, I think they should flip them with West Virginia, because although I really like Neil Brown, the talent level there kind of left. You lost David Sills. I think you lost Sims. I don't know if he got picked in the supplemental draft or not. Obviously, you lost Will Greer. You lost Dana Holgorsen. That's definitely not something that should be skipped, glossed over. You've got a first-year quarterback who didn't see a ton of time during his career at OU in Austin Kendall. I think West Virginia's in for a big step back, and I also think Kansas State probably is not going to step down as much as people think they will. I mean, that system's not terribly different from what Snyder ran. There's not going to be infighting this year, hopefully, like there was last year between Snyder and the offensive coaches. And, you know, I think Skylar Thompson's capable. So,
and honestly, they picked the right coach to run that program after Snyder.
Exactly. And the very similar thoughts on Texas Tech.
Yeah, they're the team that I think with the new coach could surprise people.
Right. I don't think they're going to have a great year, but I think 8 wins could be reachable. I think a bowl is probably the most likely outcome, and even that's a step up over compared to what Cliff Kingsbury was doing for the past few years. So, but overall, 1 through 10, I think they have it, you know, like we mentioned with these tiers, I think the tiers are essentially in the right spot. I may switch a spot or two, but other than that, I think the way the pecking order looks on that top 10 poll looks about right. And there's no glaring problem with it, for sure.
Right. And the fact that there is a lot of question marks still, I mean, when you were talking about these tiers, there is very fuzzy lines between these tiers where any team can hop into another one because, again, there are a lot of question marks. And that's probably why Oklahoma is number one. Oklahoma, if you're a big national media guy and you're like, okay, I need to fill this out, it's like voting or, you know, betting on Muhammad Ali or Michael Jordan, or you're going to bet on the team Wayne Gretzky's on because they're the teams that have won consistently. I mean, the Big 12 has been around for 23 years. Oklahoma's won 12 of those years. You know, they're a good team. They're a good program. They've been better than Texas has been as a program, or at least more consistent. So in Oklahoma, Jalen Hurts, he is honestly going into that program better as a quarterback than Kyler Murray was going into that program. Kyler Murray had a year to...
I'm going to vehemently disagree. I mean, Kyler Murray was five...
Had a higher ceiling.
How are you going to qualify this? I want to hear this. Let's go.
Jalen Hurts? Come on, dude. Jalen Hurts led Alabama to a national championship.
He did?
Kyler Murray was kind of bouncing around. He wasn't really doing anything anywhere.
I mean, Kyler Murray was a five-star coming out of high school, you know, arguably best high school player in Texas football history. So a lot of the situation at A&M was created by his side. A lot of it was created by the other side, and he found a spot in OU behind a Heisman candidate. Yes, Jalen Hurts did get Alabama to the national title game, but Tua Tagovailoa won that title game and replaced him because Jalen Hurts struggled immensely against the elite defenses in the RPO passing game. So that's something that Kyler Murray had no problem at all with. I mean, even I have not watched a lot of his Allen tape. I remember very little of his A&M era, but I know that at Oklahoma, he ran that RPO passing scheme better than anybody has in history, I'd feel like. And here's
my response to that is, from what I was told from the Oklahoma side of TFB, going into Oklahoma, the Oklahoma staff actually wasn't that high on Kyler, and the other guy was probably going to win that. However, after the summer, they decided Kyler Murray was a step above, and then he absolutely took off. Jalen Hurts, Oklahoma is 100% in on him. They are already like, he is good, which is more than they felt about Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. Now, Jalen Hurts probably has a higher floor and a lower ceiling than Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield did, but he's starting off, I feel like, at a higher level.
I still don't know if I agree with any of that. I think a lot of probably what your Oklahoma side heard referring to that. This is just me kind of being speculative, but maybe attitude had something to do with that. Because I think, honestly, if you're looking at, if Jalen Hurts was on any other team other than Oklahoma, I think the regular Texas fan would look at him and be like, yeah, that's a kid I'd support. I think he's great for college football, that type of thing. It's just that, you know, for the Texas fan looking at him across and seeing Oklahoma or Sooners across his chest, it's not going to be the same thing. Whereas there's been, not that it's justified, but there's no secret that it's definitely followed them, that attitude has been a concern of some for Baker Mayfield, for Kyler Murray. So I could definitely understand why there's a thought, you know, a more positive aura surrounding Jalen Hurts than there was surrounding Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield. Of those three to transfer there, I think obviously Jalen's the most unique as, you know, SEC Offensive Freshman of the Year, SEC Offensive Player of the Year, all that stuff. He's the most unique, but I think he's a clear third behind Kyler and then Baker as far as talent upon first arrival in Norman.
The fact of the matter is, though, Oklahoma is just reloaded.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a guy who's trying to fill out this poll, Oklahoma is your number one.
Right.
Texas, a underdog, but a team that has done well in the past and can do well in the future, has potential to do well. That's why you're number two there. Now let's go ahead and go to the four guys for Texas on this preseason All Big 12 team. So for Texas, you have Sam Ellinger at the quarterback. You have at offensive line, Zach Shackelford. On defense, you have Caden Stearns, and then your kicker, Cameron Dicker, the kicker. So I feel like that is a good mix of guys to be on there. I feel you could replace Zach Shackelford with Sam Cosmi on that list. However, I guess Shackelford is the best center in the Big 12 at this point in time. Or you could have put Creed Humphrey there as well.
He's still on there. It's just, it's not essentially O-line specific, because Creed Humphrey was a first-team preseason guy. So I think I completely understand why Cosmi is not on the list. I mean, he was not overshadowed, but a lot of times when you're just kind of being a regular offense like Texas was, not spectacular, but not awful, and you're doing your job and not getting beat, you're not doing anything that's really going to appeal to people. And that's just as an offensive lineman and a result of the atmosphere around you created by the offense that you're a part of. So, and especially, you know, just looking at the rest of them, I think, you know, Colton Mikovits at West Virginia, I can't remember if he's tackle or not, but I believe he is, looking at his size. That was part of a, you know, a West Virginia passing attack that did so much last year. Remember Yordani Kajust, who I thought the Texans might have picked up. He ended up going in the draft. And so, you know, that's another good tackle. And then the other one is Lucas Niang, who has been a great asset on that TCU offensive line. And I think, honestly, are probably a little bit more proven than Cosmi at this point. Because as well as Cosmi did last year, it was only for one season. I think Niang and I believe Mikovits, I mean, since they're all seniors, I think they have some more proven ability than Cosmi right now. But that's not to say that Cosmi can't perform to that level. But, you know, just looking down the list, Sam Ehlinger at quarterback, it was either going to be him or Jalen Hurts. I see exactly why everybody, you know, goes with Jalen or with Sam Ehlinger in this case, just because Jalen, as you know, as highly touted as he is, as unique as he is coming into Norman, he's not the guy that was there last year, and Sam Ehlinger was. Wide receiver, man, it's always going to be tough picking a wide receiver in this league. I know Colin Johnson might be the snub, but CeeDee Lamb, Tylan Wallace, Jalen Reagor have all performed better than he did and did in the past couple of years. And then, you know, running back, I think that's a pretty good selection there. Puka Williams offseason or off the field issues aside. Defense, you know, I am surprised Kenneth Murray is on there. I think that he's a guy.
I'm surprised Kenneth Murray won the Defensive Player of the Year. I think that had a lot to do with that Army game where he had 40 tackles.
I think it has partially that, a lot of stats, and that's not to hate on him. I think he's a really good defensive player. But when you're the you know, a really good defensive player surrounded by a lot of not great defensive players, at least in these past couple years, I think you're going to take over. I mean, just look at Joe Dineen at Kansas over these past few years. I think he was the nation's leading, you know, tackler over the last two seasons, but that Kansas defense was atrocious. Defensive line, I completely understand. I'm not super familiar with all these names, but I do know Ray Lima, and I do know he's been a force for them. Corey Bethley, man, I will happily admit, I thought he was going to be a super jag out of high school, and he's turned into somebody who's, you know, defenses have to respect. I thought Mike Rose from Iowa State instead of Marcel Spears might have been on there, and I also thought Ty Wallow from TCU. Ty Wallow may be my pick for Defensive Player of the Year. And, you know, even though I tried to kind of crowdsource on Twitter asking about it, you know, of course, with so many Texas people.
Which I called you out on.
I mean, it was too late to submit a ballot at that point anyway. But, you know, with so many people who follow Texas following me, I'm not surprised that a lot of it was Caden Stearns. But I mean, Ty Wallow is good. Like, I think he's going to be great in that TCU system. I think that, you know, like I said, I think either Wallow or Rose should get the nod for Defensive Player of the Year. And then on the back end, on the defensive backs, I'm a little surprised to see a Texas Tech defensive back there, just because of how they haven't really done well these past couple of years on defense. Jeff Gladney's a great pick. AJ Green's a good pick. Greg Eisworth's a good pick. Caden Stearns, I completely understand. I understand why guys like Brandon Jones and B.J. Foster aren't on there, just because, you know, B.J. Foster had some staying on the field problems, a little bit due to injury, a little bit due to targeting. Brandon Jones had the same thing. So I completely understand. I really, you know, aside from those few nitpicks that I threw out there, I don't see a ton of issues. But, you know, I think Kenneth Murray, That one I'm not exactly sure about, just considering, you know, if you're great among the rest of your teammates being not great, how much are you doing? You know, it'd be like naming Joe Dineen Player of the Year. And not to say that they're bad defensive players, but I think there are guys in better defenses who do just as much but may not accumulate the stats like Kenneth Murray is able to.
Yeah, and this is the one of the best that Texas has done for the preseason team since 2018 when they had four guys. They also had four guys on 2017. However, we know how those went. I feel like this is the most solid team they have in the past few years, at least all the way back until 2009, which was the last time Texas had preseason quarterback on this list. We also miss Cameron Dicker, which is nice to have, finally have a good place kicker. I mean, hell, Charlie Strong might have kept his job if he had a good place kicker like Cameron Dicker, but it didn't happen. Now you have Cameron Dicker, which was a huge get by Tom Herman, and I believe calling him maybe the most important player in that 2018 class, which, he's already won a Golden Hat for Texas. Wouldn't have had that without him. But Sam Ellinger winning the Offensive Player of the Year award is something that hasn't happened for Texas in quite a while. I don't know it specifically, but I would imagine the last one they got was either Jonathan Gray or all the way back to Colt McCoy.
Exactly. It just shows how far Texas fell after about the Rice game in 2010, and how far they came or started to claw back after Georgia, 7 months ago.
Right. So going into the season, you're taking a look at historically how has that Offensive Player of the Year done, and historically, the media is actually pretty good at getting this one right. At least if they are not the Offensive Player of the Year at the end of the year, they're the runner up. And the last time that was not the case was Pascal, who was the quarterback for TCU. I believe it was in 2013, 2012. Let me go ahead and make sure of that. But it was quite a while ago that the media got this one, at least just completely whiffed on it. So they usually get the guy who will absolutely slap you in the face. And this year, that is Sam Ellinger, who is honestly an underrated passer. I saw Pro Football Focus have him as having a better passer rating in a clean pocket than Trevor Lawrence from Clemson. That is a crazy stat and kind of goes to show how underrated of a quarterback passer he is. Because a lot of people think, oh, he's just a fullback who throws the ball occasionally. No, that's not what he is. That's why he's a slap you in the face Offensive Player of the Year. And it's hard to not immediately throw that guy down on your ballot as your Offensive Player of the Year. So I guess that makes it no surprise that's why Sam Ellinger is one of the six guys who is going to this year's Big 12 Media Days. And I don't know if this gets too much fanfare, too much press, who's going and who's not. But this year, bringing Sam Ellinger, he's the first quarterback since 2013 to go to the Big 12 Media Days since David Ash. What that means that Texas has their quarterback. And I guess the media realized that, and that's why he's Offensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's finally no intrigue at the position for the first time in a long time. I mean, even heading into last year, there was a little bit of a battle, but I think everybody had a feeling on how it would play out. And then 17, 16, 15, yeah, let's ignore that. But with six guys going to media days, I think what stands out to me about that is there's a lot of positive buzz about Texas, and I think Texas and, Tom Herman are trying to take advantage of that fact and put all these guys who have, either good stories to tell or good leadership qualities or have put great film on the field. Why not bring them all up there to Arlington if they're not going to, why not bring them all up to Arlington to try and, put as much good, positive media out there as possible right before the season starts, and for the first time that people might be receptive toward it. Usually when you send a punter the media days, it says a lot about your program. Yeah, he's interesting. Yeah, he's Australian, and yeah, he's really good. But at the same time,
he's not just good; he's great, Joe. But, and you are, don't blaspheme Dixon like that.
Exactly. But I mean, that still says a lot about your program, and that the best way for you to get positive press is for you to bring your punter. Now, the best way for you to bring positive press is to bring first team All Big 12 or first team quarterback in the Big 12 preseason, first team offensive lineman, senior safety who's played 4 years, senior defensive lineman who's, you know, I can't think of a superlative for Malcolm Roach off the top of my head. Senior Jeffrey McCulloch.
Really, really, really good.
Senior Jeffrey McCulloch, who thrives in these settings.
Surprisingly good.
Who will thrive in a setting like this. And Colin Johnson, who also will thrive in a setting like this and is really good on the field. So this is a chance for Texas to build a lot of positive buzz around its program. And that's why they're bringing as many players who will bring that buzz about as possible. So I think that, you know, A, this is probably the leadership team or you know, a significant portion of the leadership team, 5 seniors and 1 junior. These are the guys who are going to try to be the faces of the team this year, be the important leaders of this team this year, and, you know, try to capitalize on getting some more good press that Texas has been able to get in these past few months after winning the Sugar Bowl.
But I think the biggest statement there, again, is Sam Ehlinger being out there, sending a message to your team, this is your dude. You know, again, it's the biggest thing that's happened to Texas in quite a while is Texas having the dude at quarterback. And usually when Texas has the dude at quarterback, good things happen for the program. The last time Texas had the dude at quarterback was Colt McCoy. Texas beats Oklahoma when they have the dude at quarterback. Texas goes and wins BCS or at least now NY6 bowl games when they have the dude at quarterback. You were bringing the dude to the press conference. You know, that is the biggest thing that's coming out of this, these 6 guys is, hey, Texas has finally found their dude. Now let's get to Tom Herman. Now, a lot of this Big 12 Media Days honestly doesn't do much for us. It's for the local guys. You know,
it's questions we know a lot about already, and we may get new insight, but it's very much it's where they gather all these players. So the ESPNs, Athletics, the, you know, all these TV outlets. I mean, if you look at the schedule, it has basically set times for all these players to be basically paraded around to go TV network to TV network and record various little spots and stuff like that. This is where, you know, this is where you start to see some national storylines creep out. I can't remember if it's...
Because this is for the national media.
Exactly.
Not so much for the local media.
Right. The team beat doesn't get a ton from this. It's their introduction to the season. But the team beat also is going to be around and in Austin a few more times. And we'll, you know, be able to decipher these storylines and figure out what's what before the beginning of the year. A little bit better than, you know, national media looking at... I mean, to be honest, I remember last year, I think it was Pete Dammel. He camped... kind of by Brecken Hager last year. And, you know, Brecken Hager's a unique guy and has a very unique story and tells it extremely uniquely, to put it lightly. And that's kind of everybody's only experience. But that's what the national media starts to go for. So
Right.
You know, I think with Colin Johnson, there's going to be a lot of people, especially in this age, like last time we had a show, we talked about players being able to make money off their own image and stuff like
that.
Which,
by the way, has gone to the next level in California for anybody keeping track there.
Right. So, you know, not only do, you know, is that a thing? You've got Colin Johnson, who's making his own video series, promoting himself, not able to reap financial benefits from it. But
and from California.
Yeah, exactly. So he's kind of fitting into this whole equation, I guess, of what amateur athletics or at least amateur college football will look like in a decade. So they're like,
and I'm sure Sam Ehlinger is going to have some things to say about that as well.
Yeah, especially since he already came out and spoke about, I think, a bill on either the U.S. or Texas House floor. I can't remember which one. So, yeah, this is where national stories come about. You're not going to learn a ton about. I mean, you will. I take that back. You'll get some insight on like how's he looked over the summer. Blah blah blah, and you'll get questions and you'll get answers pretty clearly. Like, you know, he looked really great. ... over the summer without coaches there, not in pads,
right.
That type of thing. So I think the football questions will be answered more so in the coming weeks than in media days than at media days. But it's still a good, you know, good way to see what the storylines are. I love bouncing around and talking to players from other schools and sometimes coaches from other schools to ask about some overall philosophies that they have and, you know, how they maybe overall outlooks on the conference and stuff like that. But, you know, this is probably one of the more exciting media days, at least for me personally, considering there's going to be positive buzz, a lot of Texas players there, and, you know, Texas is good.
Yeah. Yeah, I really what this media days is and what I, you know, why I've actually, I don't know, I've stopped going because I have a real job, but not to say that your job isn't real, Joe, not to say that your job isn't real.
Don't worry.
You know, it's just because it's more of like a party for the media people. It's like the opening where a lot of it is less so, you know, watching the players and more so meeting people.
Yeah.
Go with all that said, we still have to ask Tom Herman questions. And when you ask coaches questions, everybody knows that there are the coaches' answers. There are the players' answers. They're the, yeah, you know, they played well, we played well, they came to play, we came to play. Go Cougs. So, what would you actually ask Tom Herman and expect an answer? What are the questions that need to be asked that are pertinent to ask Tom Herman heading into the season that you think he would actually answer?
I think on offense, I think one that he would actually answer because it's specific, and he can talk around it a little bit without saying a lot, but he can give a good
answer.
How
many elite players do you have on this team?
Yeah, it's not one of those. I think a question you could give him that he'll answer but may not get into super specific detail is how often, you know, maybe not put a percentage on it, but compared to last season, how often do you expect to have a tight end on the field? Last year, they trusted Andrew Beck a ton, rarely taking him off the field. I know that was to the chagrin of a lot of fans wondering, well, what the hell is he doing out there? When obviously, or not obviously, but a lot of times what the hell he was doing out there was occupying a defender. And that's still important in today's game. But Andrew Beck was the best option on the roster without a doubt at that tight end spot. And he leaves no super clear heir apparent. I mean, Cade Brewer is coming off of a, you know, freshman year when he was thrown into the fire and then suffered an injury. Did not show spectacularly in his snaps last year. And you've got more skill, not only maybe at the wide receiver position this year, but not only at wide receiver, but at running back. So I'm really curious, you know, at July, 16th or whatever it is, how much he expects a tight end to stay on the field for this season. Whatever answer he gives, and I don't think he's going to come out and be like, yeah, we're going to be base 20 team all year. He won't say anything like that, but I think he'll definitely, you know, give some credence to like, yeah, we're going to have some times where Keontae Ingram and Jordan Whittington or Keontae Ingram and Kirk Johnson are on the field at the same time. And just the fact by admitting that means that, you know, it's, I can't remember when Andrew Beck came off last year, I can't remember more than maybe like 10 to 15, 10 personnel snaps with four wide receivers and no tight ends. That's a huge deal for this offense that Tom Herman wants to run and prefers. So if he is willing to give an answer saying, yeah, we are going to be able to use more diverse personnel sets, I don't think that it is necessarily damning about Cade Brewer's status, but I just think it means that they know that 11 personnel may not be the most optimal all the time. We have to run this all the time, especially when they have multiple talented running backs that can put on the field at the same time and still run a solid offense through.
Man, you know, just thinking about this, and after I interjected, I'm really upset I'm not going because I would demand to be the first person to ask the question and then ask him, Tom Herman, how many elite players do you have on this team? Just to get a hearty laugh in the crowd. Mm-hmm. But I do agree. I think asking him the pertinent football questions would be the thing to do. And you're losing Andrew Beck, who honestly was a better pass catcher than most gave him credit for. But this year, they're not going to have, you know, a guy who has legitimately done that. And Cade Brewer is a good player, but he's had the injury bug. So that is a pertinent question. However, I don't think the media, at least the national media, is going to ask anything football pertinent. It's probably going to be a question about Brew McCoy, which will get a coach question or coach's answer.
That will probably get a 1 to 2 word answer, which we've seen Tom Herman do a lot. Hey, coach, any thoughts on Brew McCoy's department? Nope. And then there's awkward silence, and then he's like, that's it? And then I hope the follow-up is, that's it? And then Tom Herman says, yes. Just back-to-back one-word answer, because he makes use of it. When he doesn't want to give a subject any more credence, I know I've used that word, I need a new thesaurus. When he doesn't want to give a subject more time a day than the question asked, he'll give a one-word or simple answer. And it's not because he has a deal with the media that he doesn't like them at all. I think I've gone over this on this podcast before. It's just his strategy. He wants to answer the question and be straight up, but he doesn't want to give any sort of leaning one way or the other that, you know, a more extended answer might give.
Herman is simultaneously the most media savvy and the least media savvy coach here.
It's like, how's, you know, and it works both ways. He's like, do you have anything to say about Brew McCoy? No. Do you have anything to say about Mike Williams? No. Do you have anything? He's like, how good has he looked in camp? He's looked good. It goes both ways.
He's not in pads.
He's done it. Yeah, he's done it both ways before. So I'm excited to see who gets hit with the one word answer.
Who gets assassinated by the one word. But I agree. I think I would like to, at least for the local media guys, they're going to want to know football pertinent questions like, what is your game plan should one of your running backs go down? What is your game plan at the linebacker position? Are you going to be doing more rotation at that position? Because it seems like Todd Orlando is a fan of having set guys there. I mean, last year it was Anthony Wheeler and Gary Johnson. The year before that, it was Gary Johnson, Malik Jefferson. There wasn't much switching in, placing pieces here and there. It was, these are your guys at linebacker. You're not really changing from that. This year, they don't really have the guy. So what are you doing? What's the game plan going to be at that defensive position? That's going to be, I think, a very pertinent question. I think that would be the question I would ask. I don't know how good of an answer you're going to get from that, but that's the question I would ask. And speaking of that,
Linebackers?
Linebackers, right?
Well, positive linebackers. Let's go positive linebackers.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of linebackers, Joseph Osai is going to kick butt this year. But on the positive note here in recruiting, we had some big exclamation marks come up in the past week. But you also had some big question marks come up as well. We'll start off with the exclamation marks, though, with Prince Dorba and Lake McCree giving a 1-2 punch on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Got it.
Lake McCree, Lake Travis 2021 tight end. He's probably going to be the leading receiver for the Cavs this year, especially after they lose Garrett Wilson. I think he is a great fit for what Texas is trying to do, especially since Lake Travis runs a offense that looks real damn similar to what Herman runs now. That happens when you hire a former Texas offensive QC as your offensive coordinator. I think he's going to look really good this year. He's going to do a lot of the Andrew Beck role. He's going to be able to, he's going to block, but he's also going to get out in space because he's matched up on linebackers so often. So Lake McCree is a guy who, he's been Texas from the start. Talked to him a few hours, or actually a day after he committed. You know, he was toying with the idea of taking all 5 official visits, but, you know, at the end of the day, A, he was a Longhorn fan, and B, he wanted to focus strictly on taking Lake Travis back to the state finals. So, wanted to get through with the process. He knew that, you know, Texas was probably where he was going to end up, and just went ahead and made the call. He is, you know, so he told me the other day he was at 6'5", 220, I believe. You know, if that's his size, that's a really good size to be, you know, not only heading into your junior year, but, you know.
So you take, really what you do there is you take about an inch off and take off about 5 to 10 pounds. But
yeah, and so even if it's anywhere around there, it's not a bad weight to be entering in college. He'll have very good receiver skill sets already coming in, I think more so than what Jared Wiley had, even more so than what Reese Leto had. I don't think he'll be the same receiver that Cade Brewer was for Lake Travis, but I think they'll also have different roles in that offense, considering it changed a little bit. But he's going to look good. I know Eric Nalin said, you know, once he puts the weight on and does everything, he could be just like Andrew Beck, except for better, which I hope is the case. I think I've said before, Andrew Beck should be the minimum expectation for the tight end position at Texas. Right. So all in all, you know, more words than necessary to say this is a good pickup from a local kid who you don't want to let go. I think it's a head-to-head win over Texas A&M, if you'd like to celebrate it that way, because I'm pretty sure that they offered him either over the summer or during the spring. And, you know, you're getting what is going to be one of the two to, you know, four best players on one of the best high school teams in Texas. And that's right. Something that Texas has done a very good job of in recent years recruiting. And, you know, especially after it looks like, you know, Jalen Hullaby is going to be the why take or for the 2020 class, that why back spot, H-back in every other offense, but why in Texas. You know, for a guy who's probably a little bit more dynamic and not as much of a blocker, you go ahead and get the guy that may not be exactly as dynamic, but kind of fits in that whole old school, you know, can be the fullback, but also be the tight end role. So I think it's a good recruiting plan as far as where they've gone through the class. And, you know, I think it speaks a little bit to the types of guys Texas has gone after in the 21 class. There's still no 21 commit. For the quarterback position. And I know Jalen Milroe, Preston Stone, Jake Garcia, you know, those are some of the options that have been thrown around. But Texas now has two kids in Quay, Darius Davis, and Lake McCree, who wanted to be Longhorns without even knowing who could be throwing them the football in their class. So that's another good way, a good identification by Texas to make sure they go and get some guys who, you know, even though it's a little bit early, want to be at Texas and are good enough to play at Texas.
And McCree, who, by the way, I think should really sell the "it's high noon" sort of aspect to his last name. He is, as you said, a perfect fit for the H-back, and he's built right in between Andrew Beck and Braden Liebrock, or Liebrock, in terms of where, if you were to try to, okay, who is this kid? That's who he is. In between Andrew Beck and Braden Liebrock, which I feel like is pretty good measurement for a well-rounded H-back player. So he is a perfect fit there in your 2021 class. Your next guy, Prince Dorba. 6'2", 215. For a defensive end, he's too light, but he's not really a stand-up linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a tweener, right? Luckily, Texas has a position that is built specifically for those guys, the B-backer position. He will probably be a B-backer. You're going to get him into your program. You're going to get 20 more pounds on him, make him look like Byron Vaughns or Joseph Osai, who I think he is pretty, you know, he doesn't have as much fanfare around him as Joseph Osai, but I think he is a get that is on par with Osai.
Right. I mean, like you mentioned, this is a guy who is built for this position. And I think, you know, his recruitment kind of looked that way. A lot of times it was OU, LSU, and in Texas as the three schools that were always going to stand out for him. And I think he realized that I fit at Texas. I may not fit on the defense at OU and at LSU. Even so, even if it's not like Texas won just by standing around and being there last, they made a full-on effort to recruit Prince Dorba from the start. He's, you know, if you've seen his story and I think it's either a Fox Sports interview or something else, you know how unbelievable a story he's or unbelievable circumstances he's had to overcome just to get to where he's at. It's one of those college success stories that, you know, it's great to see anybody overcome that and go to anywhere and play for free. But for a Longhorn fan, I'm sure it's spectacular to know he's going to Texas. But he's also a really good football player. And, you know, maybe size at 6'2", 215 is not the preferred size. But like you mentioned, he's a ready, perfect, tailor-made fit for beat backer. And the one thing that I think is really interesting is, in high school, I think for the Highland Park defense, he plays the position that Texas has really struggled in these past couple cycles to recruit really strongly, and that's that 3-4 defensive end spot. That's what a lot of his high school football film is. He's tenacious there. That's not a position he's really built for, and yet he's still,
he's going up against some of the best players too.
Yeah, it's, I think Highland Park being 5A, playing some of the more talented 5A schools in once they start hitting the playoffs, he does really well there. Of course, he bumps outside on passing downs. I've only seen a handful of Highland Park games. But this is a guy that opposing defenses have to look for in high school every single time. He's playing out of position a lot, and he's still excelling and has done well enough to, have these major colleges after him and have, become a Texas commit.
And while he is perfectly built for that beat backer position, he has all of the traits where he is very versatile to be between that defensive end or that beat backer position. He's twitchy. He has natural bend at the ankles and the waist. He's flexible. He's great around the. He's got some good fundamentals around the edge, and including tackling. He has a clean release off the ball, and on top of all that, he has some crazy bursts. However, the burst might be nerfed a bit as they put some weight on him, because that's just kind of what happens. You can't burst off the ball as well when you're 240 as you can when you're 210. Luckily for the Longhorn staff, he has an upper and lower body built to make, every strength and conditioning coach salivate. Like, he is a dream, along with his crazy wingspan. The dude is well built, and he's going to be easy for strength and conditioning coaches to shape. That's what you're getting around with him. He's not an instant impact player, not yet, but he can be a big name around maybe his sophomore or junior year. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I don't think he needs to be an instant impact player, luckily, and I don't think Texas is. Texas obviously would like to recruit a lot of instant impact players and have them be able to sit and marinate. I think Tyler Johnson fits into that type of player. But, you can also get guys who have all the football skill but may not have all the physical tools to play at college football. You get those guys and, you unleash them in a couple years after guys like Joseph Osai, after guys like Byron Vaughns have made their mark on the program and then, go on to bigger and better things or exhaust their eligibility.
Right. Now the question marks. While Texas did have two big exclamation marks the past week, there are some question marks that have started to float around. In college football, it's well documented that the clearest way to winning is recruiting. That is a large reason that the recruiting industry has kind of boomed over the past decade. And so is depth. So, Joe, my question to you right now, going into not this next season, but the year after that, where are you concerned about depth on this team right now?
I think you have to be concerned a little bit about depth at linebacker, especially once you lose Jeffrey McCulloch, a guy who's been there, the calming force at linebacker, a guy who knows the position and, is the elder statesman in that position group. I'm not concerned about wide receiver depth. I'm not particularly concerned about quarterback depth, O-line depth, D-line depth, safety depth, corner depth. It's got to be running back.
Right. And maybe even a little bit of defensive tackle. Maybe a little bit. But you've had some question marks come up this past week concerning your running backs, your linebackers, and your defensive tackle. Vernon Broughton is going to be announcing his recruitment soonish. You have Bijan Robinson, who's going to be recruited, who's going to be announcing his recruitment before the season. I think it was August 2nd when he's going to do it. And then you also, while this is all happening, you're looking at your linebacker room in your linebacking class, and you do a good job of recruiting B linebacker, but the inside linebacker, that's the big question. So as we can see, the Texas 2020 class, they're doing a decent job so far for what will ultimately be a small class in wait for the 2021 cycle. But the problem of the depth at certain positions is starting to raise some question marks around guys like Stan Drayton and what is happening at the linebacker position, and even maybe even a little bit of defensive tackle. We won't touch defensive tackle, not this show. But let's start off with...
after I saw that T'Vondre Sweat weighs 320 pounds, a lot of concerns about defensive tackle vanished for me. The defensive end, a little bit, you like better players, but I think if you're talking straight up nose, I think I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah. Stan Drayton, though, he was supposed to be a rainmaker coming from Ohio State, or coming actually from the Bears, but he had a good track record at Ohio State with guys, you know, obviously Zeke Elliott. He brought in Zeke Elliott, who was a really highly touted player. However, it seems like the more we look at this, the more he might have been a product of the fact that recruiting is easy when things are good. And I'm coming to this conclusion so far, by looking at the past 3 years. So let's start off with 2018, right? Keyonte Ingram, great get for Texas. He is looking really, really good with 20 extra pounds on him. He did really well last year. However, let's look at the recruiting side of this thing. Did he help ensure that he stayed? Yes, he helped ensure that Keyonte Ingram stayed the Longhorn. But was this a difficult recruitment to win? Not really. This should have been like shooting fish in a barrel kind of deal. I'm not saying it was an easy recruitment, but it should have been a pretty easy recruitment to get the guy who is not a very highly rated running back, is not highly touted, and in a state where it's a very down year, people aren't really going to your state for running back. Keyonte Ingram should have been an easier pull for Texas.
I agree with a lot of what your overarching point is. You and I talked about it before we even started this, and I posted this on Inside Texas, I believe. I don't nitpick because a player signed later than what everybody wanted. He still signed, and I might even disagree that it was a difficult recruitment. I mean, the reasons why he didn't sign on the first ever early signing day were laid out because he didn't want to, you know, be a distraction for his teammates. He did make a visit to A&M. It was half-hearted. There were other circumstances surrounding it at Carthage that led him onto that visit, and it remained half-hearted. There was never much doubt as far as him still signing. It just happened, you know, a month and a half later than everybody wanted. So I do agree with where you're going with this, but I think to complain that a player signed, you know, a month and a half later, that's picking a hard nit. I think that's almost piling on. But I know where you're about to go, and I think that you're about
right.
The points you're about to start bringing up make a lot more sense to me than picking on the 2018 cycle with Keyonte.
Right. I'm saying he did a good job here. That's basically the point. In 2018, he did a good job.
Mm.
But it wasn't for a big national player. It was for a guy who you're supposed to get.
Right.
2019, you're in a down year in Texas in the running back position. In your running back room needs depth. It needs some serious depth. After you had concerns with Tonyo Carter and Daniel Young. You have to go out and get Trey Watson at the last minute. So your running back room...
Who they got?
But I'm saying your running back room is in a little bit of disrepair.
Right.
So you're going after Trey Sanders, a big national name, Noah Kane, Darian Brown, and DeAndre Glass. And then Ramondre Stevenson at the end of it. And what actually really bothers me most about this class, and this 2019 class, was, and I don't know if this is on Stan Drayton, but I think it's more of my gripe with the Texas recruiting strategy of, it was a very arrogant move to not go after Ramondre Stevenson. He's a decent running back. He's a JUCO guy who could give you some immediate depth at that position. They could have had him, but instead of grabbing him, Oklahoma, who already, I believe, had two running backs at that time, pulled Ramondre Stevenson away from Texas. So now he's your problem instead of helping you. They completely passed over him in a position where they needed him. And they should have realized at this point, Stan Drayton was not in a really solid spot with Noah Kane, and you were not getting Trey Sanders. And they did not realize really either of those two until it was way too late. And then to pile on everything, Darian Brown, probably his football career is done. Trey Sanders, I don't know how much you can really put on Drayton, and Kane, even then, it's kind of half on Drayton. You found out, okay, hey, he's not He's not blessed with the gift of gab. The recruiting position, you need a new angle here, or, you know, he's just not a great recruiter. He can't really bring in the national guys. So go in the 2020. The season, the cycle is not over. The cycle is not over, but you have an almost barren running back room with really two guys. The cycle is, as Ron White says, loaded with five-star talent. There are so many guys out there. I mean, it's just mind-boggling how rich the state of Texas was in running backs in this class, how rich the United States was in running backs in this class. There are literally three or four guys in this class who are legit players, including Zach Evans. So you have cushion upon cushion to get this right, Stan Drayton. But right now, Bijan Robinson, who is set up to commit on August 2nd, from what I'm hearing, and you know, I'm sure everybody's starting to look at it with the crystal balls, it's not looking great for Texas. And not that Texas, when they get back from their vacations, that they can try and turn it around, and they might do a good job of that because Ohio State is going after Jalen Knighton, and they're probably going to land him. But Texas is right now on, I believe, option F if they miss on Bijan. Now, option A, Zach Evans. It's still alive, but not really. Kendall Milton was plan B. Not happening. Bijan Robinson, plan C. Might happen, not looking good. Plan D, which was a plan A originally, get Jace McClellan. So they missed on him. Now plan D is miss on Jace McClellan and hope he flips later, which not a really great plan. Plan E is Ty Jordan, who looks like he's going to USC. So now you're potentially, if you miss on Bijan Robinson and you miss on Zach Evans and then you can't flip Jace McClellan, you're on plan F for running back position in a year where you should have been able to at least stay in plan C. It's almost like throwing a dart at a wall and missing. I don't know how you did that. If Stan Drayton misses on Bijan Robinson, if Stan Drayton can't then pull in Zach Evans or Jace McClellan or at least Ty Jordan, it's time for Tom Herman to do some real soul searching on what needs to happen at that running back position. And that leads me into the inside linebackers. Now, inside linebacker recruiting has been okay, right? It's been decent. You got Adeoye, who is a big name. You got last year, you got DeGabriel Floyd, who kind of fell into your lap a little bit, but he was a really good player. But now you're looking into the next year where you have six or seven guys on the team who could be good, but you don't really have a player. And DeGabriel Floyd's status is iffy. You don't have a 100% solid answer for that position right now. And that might change when we come to the season, but at this point, the position is a big question mark. So who did you go after this year? Josh White, who you whiffed on. He was going to LSU. Justin Flo, another whiff. He's not going to Texas. Leonith Whitehead, who is in the middle of SEC territory. He's not going to Texas. He's probably going to Georgia. Brennan Scott, who you're kind of keeping warm right now, is Texas is iffy on. And you guys like Damian Sellers, who probably not going to Texas. Court Williams, you got in late on. So the inside linebacker position is a little iffy this year in terms of strategy, but not terrible in terms of recruiting. You do need some help there, though. You need some help. And so what should happen, and what I'm thinking is Texas, and we've talked about this, Joe, needs a reshuffling of their staff in terms of who needs to be where. There are right now six coaches on the offensive side and four coaches on the defensive side.
And Tom Herman.
Beatty needs to be a position coach. Whether it's running back, tight end, wide receiver, you need to get him because supposedly he's a plus recruiter. And then Texas either needs to move to tight end or move on from one of the wide receiver coaches. And then take that coaching position, move it over the defensive side. And an idea that was given to me, get a front seven coach, a guy who is the front seven linebacker, maybe the linebacker and defensive end coach. So he's kind of in charge of, hey, here's our front seven strategy for this here. And that way you have a guy who can recruit both linebacker and defensive tackle. Maybe, or maybe move Oscar Giles to defensive end and outside linebacker and get a guy who is a nose tackle dude or an inside dude. What do you think?
I don't know if I agree with that specialization, because I think when you're talking about the front seven coach, I mean, you got Todd Orlando, he's the linebackers coach. And, you know, I know you're the defensive coordinator and you're kind of high level on some of the recruitment, but you still have to recruit. And I've seen a lot of even on Inside Texas, people say like, well, let's get a bona fide linebackers coach.
You have one.
Todd Orlando is the bona fide linebackers coach. It's his job. And you know, creating, you know, if there was offensive coaches reshuffling to where another spot opened up on the defensive side of the ball, do you need a defensive end coach and a defensive tackle coach for a three down front?
Where else are you going to put them? Are you going to put them on in the secondary?
I think what you could do is do split inside linebackers, outside linebackers, which is what a lot of 3-4 teams do. But the thing is, if that person you're adding on the defensive side in this hypothetical, if when you're removing an offensive coach, whether it's one of the receivers or you know, whatever it is, and you're putting them over on the defensive side of the ball, whoever it is has to be a plus recruiter, because if he's an outside linebacker / defensive end, he's probably recruiting 2 to maybe 4 guys a cycle. That guy has to be a plus recruiter. He's got to be able to go out, do more than just be able to get guys at his position. He's got to be somebody like Jason Washington, who can do more than just recruit high level at corner. He's got to be able to go, you know, if you're only recruiting a very specified position, you should be able to go out and recruit more than just one position.
Like Jason Washington, who's able to go out and not just recruit corner, but get Caden Stearns at the safety position.
Right.
Get a guy who is a linebacker and defensive end coach who can go out and get you a guy like Vernon Broughton or DeMarvin Leal.
Right. So even though I may be fumbling through this explanation, I do know that the overarching point is, if you're going to make a switch and put, you know, remove an offensive coach and add a defensive coach, no matter what his role is, you have to make sure 100% that he's one of the better recruiters in the country, because other than that, all game plan is extremely important. You know, skill teaching is extremely important. But if you're not teaching the best guys in the country at a school like Texas, and you're not bringing in the best guys in the country at a school like Texas, you know, what exactly does it matter if you add to the skills of a good player, whereas other teams are adding to the skills of a great player?
Basically, you need to get a guy who can shore up your linebacking position, get a better game plan there than what Texas has currently, and get a guy who can simultaneously turn Vernon Broughton into Marvin Leal, who Texas should have had clear advantages and pulled them in pretty without a lot of fanfare because of the mothers, and make sure those guys aren't going to A&M. That's the basic what you need, and that's why you should get another guy, pull one of those wide receiver coaches, take that coaching position, and throw it to the other side of the ball. That's what needs to happen here. That might be an answer to some of the question marks that Longhorn fans are having at this point in the recruiting cycle. I think that's going to do it for us. I think we hit on basically everything, and we're definitely going to probably get back on the Stan Drayton thing, because that's going to be a storyline for recruiting throughout this year, because Texas is in dire need of some running backs. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. August 2nd, Joe. But this next week, we got Big 12 Media Days. Should be fun. I look forward to the memes that flow from those 2 days. But on that note, that has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on InsideTexas.com, or you can find me at JosephCook89 on Twitter.
Or you guys can find us, other shows, other episodes on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Podbean, wherever you guys can find a podcast. On that note, thank you all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.